It is Thursday, September 27th, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas. KUAF is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
Support for KUAF also comes from Penguin Ed's Barbecue, offering three locations in Fayetteville, a traditional hot breakfast, plus vegetarian dishes, omelets, and pastries, served at the Mission and Crossover location each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 7 until noon. More information, including menus, at penguineds.com.
On this edition of Ozarks, Roby Brock helps us break down the final 40 or so days of the election season in Arkansas. And I talked to best-selling author James Dashner about his book for young adult readers. He'll be in Rogers this weekend.
First, a company that plans on making mobile video editing studios available to more than only the most well-budgeted directors has announced plans to set up shop in Fayetteville. According to thecitywire.com, Radar Mobile Studios announced Tuesday it will set up its research and development, manufacturing, and corporate headquarters in Fayetteville, though it already has offices in Utah, California, Florida, and New York. The company designs remote mobile studios that would allow filmmakers to do editing and processing work that would normally be farmed out to post-production facilities on either coast. Steve Clark, the president of the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce, says locals who were aware of the company recruited Radar to move to Northwest Arkansas.
About a year ago, they were here and looked at our community and looked at our location in terms of proximity to such a pretty good population base. The notion that, as you know, they can download and edit feature films and other sorts of productions things with mobile facilities that allow an expeditious way to get things done.
The company has two mobile studio designs planned. Radar One is a 45-foot-long recreational vehicle that has full production capabilities. Radar Remote, a pared-down version built on a Range Rover SUV platform. The company plans to have three hubs located throughout the country, allowing mobile units to cover about 75% of the country within a 700-mile radius. Steve Clark says that Radar becoming part of the Fayetteville business landscape helps flesh out the resource network in the area.
It just enriches our tool bag in the sense of the kinds of businesses that we have here. We're no longer a one-dimensional community, and we're no longer a one-dimensional region. So when people look at Northwest Arkansas and they look at Fayetteville, it's not just education, it's not just retail, it's not just poultry, it's not just trucking. It's obviously the arts and the creative economy. It's obviously innovation. It's obviously nanotechnology. It's a lot of those other things. And what Radar brings is a complement to all of that.
Clark says that the company's move to Fayetteville is part of a larger trend of expansion in the creative economy in the area.
When the Fayetteville City Council meets next Tuesday night, it will be asked to amend its vending and peddling ordinance as it pertains to parks in the city. The reason? To allow the Fayetteville Farmers Market to extend its operations at the Botanical Gardens of the Ozarks at Lake Fayetteville Park. The market is currently open on Sunday mornings, but the request would allow the market to operate on Saturday mornings and Wednesday evenings. Lori Boatwright is the public coordinator for the Fayetteville Farmers Market. She says that the organization is currently limited in what it can do at the market held three times weekly on the downtown square.
And we have more vendors than we have room for. We also have a different customer clientele that, you know, would like access to the products, but they don't come to the square because the hours don't fit their needs, or, you know, they don't care for the square atmosphere. Most people love it. We've seen that in a huge increase in numbers this season for sure. But some people just don't like that atmosphere. And so we'd like to be able to not only provide additional selling opportunities for our vendors, but to reach a different demographic of customers as well.
Boatwright says that the extended hours at the Botanical Gardens wouldn't mean that the market is competing with the downtown market.
We wouldn't, you know, even be considering it if it was. You know, we're small farmers and producers. Hurting our own business isn't something that we're looking to do.
Boatwright says that along with the extended hours, market organizers are considering offering the market at the Botanical Gardens year-round.
We are entertaining the idea of a winter market. It would take a few other things to work out. We'd love to be able to have that opportunity as well. Many of our growers, you know, now have the capabilities to produce food year-round.
Boatwright says that if things work out for the winter market sooner rather than later, the extra days of operations would be implemented before the year's end. If not, the extended hours of operation will be put in place when the market opens next May. But first, the proposal has to make it past the City Council and Planning Commission for approval.
Projects funded by a recent bond election in Springdale are moving closer to construction. Springdale Mayor Doug Sprouse says that at the end of October, the city plans on selling the bonds in order to get the money to begin construction. Mayor Sprouse says that once the bonds are sold, the city has 3 years to finish the projects tied to the bonds.
Of course, the interchange is about to start. That'll be the largest project of the road portion of the bonds. We've got a couple of parks, large park sites identified that I believe the council will support. So we're well on our way to begin development of those two large parks, one on the southeast portion of the city and one in the northwest portion of the city. The fire stations, we are moving ahead with those. We know we're going to build at least three. That would be replacing two and moving them out further, and then building one completely new station.
Mayor Sprouse says that once the bonds are sold, the city has 3 years to finish the projects tied to the bonds.
National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day is Saturday. State and local health and law enforcement agencies are working to encourage people to properly dispose of old, unneeded medications they might have in their home. Pulaski County Sheriff spokesman Lieutenant Carl Minden says nationally, prescription drug abuse is a huge problem, especially in Arkansas and particularly with teens. He says Arkansas law enforcement officials are making a priority to get the drugs off of the streets.
As far as the volume that's collected in the four-state area that we belong to, as far as the DA is concerned, we collect more than the other four states, which is good that we collect that much, but it also tells you that there's a lot of prescription drugs out there that people don't need access to. You know, either a small child could get to it in a medicine cabinet if it's not put up properly.
More than 130 law enforcement agencies across Arkansas will host collection sites as part of the prescription drug take-back site scheduled to be open Saturday. For more information or to find a site near you, visit artakeback.org.
Overcast tonight, 60% chance of rain, a low in the mid-60s in northwest Arkansas. For the Arkansas River Valley, mostly cloudy, 50% chance of rain, lows in the upper 60s. Tomorrow, overcast and Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. Look out, 70% chance of rain, highs in the mid-70s in northwest Arkansas. It's a 60% chance of rain and highs in the mid-80s tomorrow for the Arkansas River Valley. For Friday night, overcast, 60% chance of more rain, lows in the mid-60s. This is Ozarks at Large. Election day is under 6 weeks away, and Arkansas voters seem to have made up their collective minds on several races. Poll data released this week by Talk Business and Hendricks College indicate, to no surprise, that Governor Mitt Romney will easily take the state's electoral votes, and the Republicans in each of Arkansas's four congressional districts have sizable leads over their nearest competitor. Roby Brock from Talk Business helps oversee the poll, along with Jay Barth from Hendricks College. Roby is with me. Roby, the large lead for Mitt Romney, the leads for the GOP congressional candidates, comes at the same time the state's governor, Democrat Mike Beebe, has, for this political era, huge approval ratings. What gives?
We are schizophrenic, aren't we, as voters in Arkansas? I think this is largely what you have been seeing play out for quite some time in Arkansas, where the Democratic culture of the state tends to still be in play for local officials, where you can still kind of touch the cloth, per se. You see these people week in, week out. You hear about them. You read about them in the newspaper, on the radio, on TV. And so you have a connection to somebody like a Governor Mike Beebe, who is, as you said, as wildly popular as governor and has been throughout his whole tenure. At the federal level, with our presidential numbers, and you've seen this trend kind of developing for years in congressional and Senate races, you see less of a connection between traditional Arkansas Democrats and these federal office holders. We saw the huge swing in 2010, which I think was a big anti-Obama statement here in Arkansas, and it looks like it's setting up to do that again here in 2012.
The latest poll numbers, you break down Governor Beebe's approval by congressional district. The smallest approval number he has is in the first. It's 60. As high as 68 in the second congressional district. Can the governor, a very popular Democrat, do anything to aid the Democrats that are still running in races?
Well, we're going to find out, Kyle, and I think that is really what will be the defining kind of conclusion of this year's elections. It does appear that the presidential race is very much over in Arkansas, and I would argue that the congressional races are too. The Republicans have double-digit leads in every one of the four congressional districts. I don't see that changing. The battle is really for who is going to control the state Senate and the state House of Representatives. Obviously, Republicans have a historic opportunity to take control of those two chambers. Democrats are fighting tooth and nail to hold on to those majorities that they have by very slim margins right now. And Governor Beebe has a big vested interest in making sure that they remain in Democratic control, or at least one of them does, so that there is an ability for him to help drive his agenda, which has been to cut the grocery tax and to kind of keep government, state government, on somewhat of cruise control, run it efficiently, expand the Medicaid program would be a big undertaking for him, but by and large, not a big shakeup of what's happening in state government. Republicans have a much more ambitious agenda of greater tax cuts and reducing some government services by finding efficiencies throughout state government. And so there'll be a huge conflict, I think, between the governor's agenda and Republicans' agenda if Republicans get control of one or both chambers of the state capitol. So I think you're going to see BB expend a tremendous amount of energy. He already is. I think you're going to see him do this more with these popularity ratings he has. But as our polling indicates, he's got some headwinds to bridge in that realm.
And, of course, it really comes down to those few districts. I mean, because many of the legislative races were decided in the May primary. Political strategists from both parties in the state know that we're talking about those small handful of races that could determine who's in control in either chamber.
Yeah, it's very much like we see at the national level, the presidential race, where there are some swing states that are going to really dictate the outcome of the election. I mean, I think by the time we get towards Election Day, 3 to 5 states will really define who's going to be the next president. And in Arkansas, at the legislative level, I think that there are, you know, probably 5 to 7 races in the state Senate that may, you know, swing or determine who's going to control that chamber, and there'll be less than a dozen in the House. So you've really got just, this handful of local races that are going to determine who controls each chamber of the legislature. It's going to be fascinating to watch. It's very difficult for us to poll and kind of track some of this stuff because when you get down to that level, it just really becomes difficult to get some of the detailed data that you need to figure out what's going on. I'm hearing from both sides, Republican and Democratic strategists who are doing polling in some of these races, that can tell you on any given day you may find Republicans up in one race and Democrats the next day. And so there is some swing back and forth. But I can tell you both sides feel really good about their chances, but it will come down to late hours on election night, or quite possibly we may see some recounts if the races are very close, like we saw in 2010. We may not know who controlled the two chambers of the legislature for a couple of days if that becomes the case.
One of the questions that the Talk Business Hendricks College poll asked was favorable or unfavorable opinion of Arkansas's two U.S. senators. Democrat Mark Pryor, Republican John Bozeman, neither could get to 50%. Considering how generally the population thinks of the blanket statement Congress, that's not surprising. What kind of caught my eye was that at least a fourth of those you asked had no opinion whatsoever, favorable or unfavorable, about Senator Pryor. More than a third, the same with Senator John Bozeman. Can we make anything of that yet? Pryor's not up for re-election for 2 years, and Senator John Bozeman not for 4.
Well, we see this from time to time. I mean, first of all, on a statewide level, John Bozeman is not a greatly known commodity, but obviously very well known in the 3rd Congressional District where he represented for so long. But other than this statewide campaign in 2010 for the U.S. Senate, it's kind of his introduction to voters outside of the 3rd Congressional District. So I'm not terribly surprised by the, you know, a little bit more than a third of folks that don't really have an opinion of him. He just really hasn't had a chance to, you know, permeate their thought. Pryor is a little bit more surprising. The Pryor name is obviously a, you know, franchise in Arkansas politics and has been forever. And my interpretation of those poll results for both of those guys is just that neither one of them are on the ballot this year. Unlike the governor, who's in the spotlight almost daily with reporters and in press articles, Bozeman and Pryor are not in the press every day. And so you do have this little bit of a disconnect of people not really necessarily knowing what they're doing all the time or hearing from them all the time. And with them not on the ballot and there's not any real huge burning issues at the federal level that are playing out here in the Arkansas headlines, I'm not that surprised that people don't have an opinion one way or the other. It also says that they're persuadable. And when Pryor comes up in 2014 or Bozeman down the road, you know, if those numbers are kind of in the same realm of where they're at right now, you will definitely see some people view that as opportunistic to say we can persuade people to vote for an alternative candidate versus the guys that are in office now.
Will you have any more polls between now and Election Day?
I pray that we don't have any more polls between now and Election Day. Yeah, we will. We are going to probably go out and do another round with some of the ballot issues that will be out there. Obviously, medicinal marijuana is on the ballot. The half-cent highway tax is an issue that will be out there. I think we're still up in arms as to whether or not there will be a casino amendment on the ballot. So we'll come back and take a look at that. We may throw something else in the mix if we see something percolating around the state level, but I think we will do that polling. I don't think we'll come back and do any more congressional or presidential polling. I feel like those numbers are pretty firm. We would be wasting our time and money to expect much of a change in some of those races since there's not that much money being spent right now, particularly by the folks that are behind in those races. So we'll see. If you got an idea, send it my way.
You can see the latest poll results at talkbusiness.net. It's the Talk Business Hendricks College Poll. Roby Brock is the editor and publisher of talkbusiness.net. Roby, thank you very much.
Good to be with you, Kyle.
Hey, did you hear Car Talk last week?
If you'll guarantee that this issue goes away, then go ahead and do it. If it doesn't go away, I'm not paying for the breakdown.
You know, we need 100 customers like her.
Yeah, I know.
We have 500 of them now.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got a snowball's chance of finding someone that's going to do that.
Join us for more keen yet sensitive analysis this week on Car Talk.
The final Car Talk on KUAF, this Saturday at 9 a.m. and again at 3 p.m.
Dying is easy, comedy is hard. That showbiz axiom, uttered perhaps first by stage actor Edmund Kean, gets tilted a bit when you're a writer for the annual Gridiron Show at Rogers Little Theater. The show is, as always, written by local journalists about newsmakers, and it seems comedy might just be a bit easier if you have a football scandal for inspiration.
Jessica, call Captain Lance King of the Arkansas State Police. Nobody else. He'll know what to do. And you were never here.
That infamous motorcycle mishap last spring gets plenty of attention in the 2012 Gridiron, but there's more. Fayetteville's mayoral race, the summer brouhaha over Chick-fil-A sandwiches, and other news items get at least one joke each. And there is a presidential election, of course. Catherine Sherrills has been working with the local Gridiron for years. She says a big national election isn't always the comedy blessing you might think.
The only problem is that we have problems with every presidential election being the same. We have a different vehicle. But it seems we had a big discussion this year about we can't end again with none of the above.
Some of the writers have been conjuring up material for the Gridiron long enough to recall writing skits about the construction of Walton Arts Center. Others, like Joel Walsh, a reporter with the Northwest Arkansas Times, are contributing for the first time.
I did a couple skits, one on...
Well, you know, it's protocol. You don't tell us which ones you wrote.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah.
That way the newsmakers don't come after you.
No, this is my first year, right?
The writing is generally a team effort, and that procedure is especially handy when something blatantly appropriate for send-up happens after most of the writing is over and the rehearsals have begun.
There's a couple spots where we just said, insert whatever gaffe happened the week before, because you're always going to have that, especially in a presidential election. But other things were more set in stone that had happened several months ago. But we definitely leave room to improvise, and it has kind of evolved over the past several weeks.
So there could be jokes involving an empty chair on the stage, or an evil-eyed state official being hauled in front of a legislative committee against her will, or a surreptitiously filmed presidential candidate. All events that happened well after the formal writing sessions. Ray Miner, a journalism instructor at the University of Arkansas with newspaper reporting and editing experience, says writing the skits can be a type of professional catharsis.
I mean, you work at a paper or you work at a news outlet, you've kind of got to pull your punches a little bit. You can't go out there and blast away at one side or the other. Now, I'm not kind of hindered by that anymore. I can pretty much say whatever I want. And, you know, it's just my classes and my students that I have to work with. I don't have readers calling me. I don't have higher-up editors calling me. I can pretty much do what I want to do and have fun with it.
Money raised by the show is directed toward scholarship efforts of the local branch of the American Association of University Women and the Rogers Little Theater Building Fund. Many of the figures the writers poke fun at will be in the audience, and there are legends that some public figures have voiced disappointment they weren't lampooned or mentioned on stage. But rest assured, the big targets will be included. Ray Miner, one of the writers, says no subject is too obvious for inclusion.
We take all the low-hanging fruit we can grab. If we're going to write something, it doesn't matter whether it's obvious or not. If it's out there, it's in Northwest Arkansas. If it got coverage, we're going to be all over it. And I think we've got a good wide representation of the stories that have happened in the past year there in the show.
Writers admit that they want to stuff each gridiron show full of newsmakers and events that the audience will remember. Last week's or last month's gaffe is a bit more likely to be included than last December's. So public figures who would rather not have their exploits recounted in next year's gridiron, take this advice from Charlie Allison, longtime gridiron writer, about when to commit your embarrassing faux pas.
Do it October 8th.
That would be the day after this year's Gridiron closes. The 2012 Northwest Arkansas Gridiron Show is Friday and Saturday, October 5th and 6th at the Rogers Little Theater. You can learn more at nwagridiron.com. This year's cast of local journalists, reporters, editors, and journalism students again includes our own Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas, and with me on the phone is New York Times bestselling author James Dashner. He'll be in Northwest Arkansas on Saturday for the Rogers Public Library's 6th Annual Conversations Fundraiser. Good afternoon, Mr. Dashner.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, yes. We're excited to have you here. So you are a New York Times bestselling author of the Maze Runner series.
Uh-huh.
And then also Infinity Ring number 1, Mutiny in Time, which is what you'll be speaking about tomorrow.
Yes, it just came out.
I would like to talk about your books, but first I'd like to talk a little bit about you.
Okay.
You weren't always a children's author, that you had a stint as in the finance world.
Yes, that is very true. My dark, dirty secret.
Okay. How did you make that switch from numbers to words and creativity?
You know, it's a great question. I've always loved to read. I've always loved to write. I wanted to be an author since I was a kid. But as most people know, it's a hard industry. And in my practical side, I knew I needed some kind of stable job until my dream came true. So I studied accounting in college, even though I had gotten pretty serious about writing. And I just kept working towards it, and eventually I was able to move beyond finance and be an author full-time, and I haven't looked back since.
Does that background help you in your current career?
It helps me a little bit. I think it gave me some training with understanding my contracts and understanding the numbers and, you know, making sure that I can support my family and things like that. It definitely helps.
You mentioned your family.
Yes.
I saw that you have children.
I do. I have four.
Do they have anything to do with your inspiration?
Definitely. Especially as now they're getting a little bit older. They're starting to read my stuff and give me some pretty honest feedback. And usually it's pretty positive. But they also help me stay connected with kids and, you know, hear how they speak these days. It makes me sound like an old man, but definitely helped me in many direct and indirect ways with my books.
Okay. Will you tell me a little bit about the Maze Runner trilogy?
Sure. The Maze Runner trilogy is a post-apocalyptic story that's for young adults and full of adventure and mystery and is actually being developed by 20th Century Fox for a movie. So I'm very excited about that, even as I go on tour to promote my new Infinity Ring series.
Right. That's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
For young readers and older also. I enjoy reading children's books myself.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I think most authors who write for children or teenagers, they really just sit down and write a fun story. They're not really thinking about what age they're writing for, so I think that's why so many adults have been enjoying them.
So your new book, which was released at the end of August,
mm-hmm.
So Infinity Ring, Mutiny in Time.
Yes.
And it's the first book of a seven book series published by Scholastic.
Correct.
So you wrote this first book, but the other, I think, five books are going to be written by other authors.
Yeah, it's patterned a little bit after another series Scholastic did, The 39 Clues, which was very successful, and we're really excited about it. We wanted to do something different and unique, and so it's a time travel adventure story that really opens kids up to history and adventure. But the reason we're using several authors is, number one, it's just a unique thing to get different perspectives and styles, but also so the books can come out pretty quickly. It's been a lot of fun for me to work with them. It's very, very collaborative, creatively, and I'm also going to write the last book in the series.
How can you do that? Write the first book and the last book?
They call me the architect of the series, so I did outline the whole thing and really developed the characters and the background and the storyline and all that. And then the other authors, we worked together to really try hard to keep the style and tone and voice the same, but also give them the freedom to use their own, you know, creativity and imagination. It's actually working really well. We all get along great, and I'm excited to wrap it all up with the last book.
The Infinity Ring series is set in our time, 2012. But
yes.
The world is much different. I read some of it. I wasn't able to read all of it, but the capital of the United States isn't Washington, D.C.
Right.
And there are only 48 stars on the flag.
Right. It's an alternate version of our world where certain major events through history went differently than we have learned about, called the Great Breaks. And basically it caused ripples and disturbances in the fabric of time that have messed up our current world and caused things to be different. So the main characters get recruited by an ancient society that has discovered time travel, and they send them back to start correcting these great breaks to try to get basically to save the world.
How did you make sure that it was age appropriate? Because in one scene, they're in the Revolutionary War. How mm-hmm. do you, I mean, what if a kid doesn't know what the Revolutionary War is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's written in a way that if they don't know about the event behind the story, it still makes sense, but it really spurs, hopefully, an interest for them to learn more about it. I think that the story is very entertaining, but, I mean, one of our main goals is to create an interest in history and get these kids interested in history and learn about history, as well as just to associate reading with fun. Although our goal is always to entertain kids, I think that this series will also have a lot of value in terms of education.
Did you yourself have to kind of go back over your history and re-educate yourself a little bit, or?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I did a lot of research, and it was a lot of fun. I worked with a Scholastic team. It's very collaborative, but we have found a lot of little interesting tidbits of history that are scattered throughout the books and in the game, the online game, that people are going to have a lot of fun discovering.
About that game, the series is kind of designed, you know, I know when I was reading Harry Potter, or, you know, people now with the Game of Thrones, you finish one book in a series and you're waiting until that next book comes out.
Right.
But this game kind of gives readers something to do while they're waiting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's part of the purpose of it is basically with each book you're getting two adventures. You read the story and have a lot of fun with that, and then it leads directly into a mission online where you can take the place of the characters and really discover a recreated time in history online that the graphics are amazing. Yeah, it sort of passes the time, and then that leads directly into the next book. And the books are going to come out far more quickly than you see normally in a series, so I think kids are really going to love it.
You mentioned that your first series, Maze Runner, was kind of a post-apocalyptic, forgive me, I can't get it out.
It's a hard word to say.
Post-apocalyptic. And then, you know, this Infinity series is also, you know, kind of this dystopian world.
Uh-huh.
And there's the Hunger Games that are, you know, very popular, and even adult books,
uh-huh.
Kind of on this, you know, this kind of theme. What is it that's so intriguing?
I think that the reason it's so popular right now is it has this otherworldly feel, and I think fantasy had a huge surge in the reading world. And these dystopian, post-apocalyptic stories have that feel, otherworldly fantasy-type story, but has an added element of being set in the real world and actually being possible because it's in our future. And it just adds an element of creepiness and things to think about that have really fascinated kids, and I think they're just having fun with that. I think that's why it's so popular right now.
I'm glad you're stopping in. Thank you so much, Mr. Dashner.
Okay, thank you. All right. Appreciate the talk.
Yes. James Dashner is the author of Infinity Ring Number 1, A Mutiny in Time. He's the featured guest at Rogers Public Library Foundation's 6th Annual Conversations Fundraiser this Saturday. For more information, rplfoundation.org.
It is Thursday, September 27th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Becca Martin Brown. She's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We won't even talk about how long it took me to get here.
Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue weekend.
Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. But the university's doing a couple of things you might want to consider tonight. They're doing something called Hogs, Blues, and Barbecue.
What's
this
that?
Does not have racing pigs.
Okay.
This has food and music, and it goes on till 3 o'clock in front of the Union. And it's free.
In the afternoon?
Yes, until 3 o'clock today.
Well, when you're talking Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, and you say until 3,
correct.
I
it could be a.m.
afternoon.
I honestly don't know which it is. Yes, okay.
And they're also hosting comedian Hannibal Buress tonight at 8 o'clock at the Union Ballroom, and it, too, is free.
All right.
And everything else is in What's Up about Bikes and Songs, and if you look tomorrow, we'll have a redux of everything you need to know.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Cooler temperatures are finally arriving. We've spent most of the summer with the windows rolled up as we drive past meadows this summer. Joe Neal, though, provides a soundtrack of what we weren't hearing as we rolled by in air-conditioned comfort.
A small bird flushes from the roadside. We're slow driving a road through open farmland. It's all hay fields and a scattering of taller trees. Did you see that? Sparrow-sized. But that doesn't help much with identification. But that tail, well, I'm left with an impression that the tip has bold white notches. The bird disappears into the grass. In summer, in western Arkansas, it's probably a lark sparrow's. Some folks know it as the quail bird. The pattern on its head is reddish brown, black, and white, like that of a northern bobwhite or quail. We can see this as it ascends to a high perch for singing. The colorful harlequin pattern blends well into grasslands. It's a headdress well matched to complex melodies of its song. The lark sparrow is perched and singing atop a light pole. Then a northern mockingbird drives it away. In the following recording, we hear the last sparrow and the first mockingbird songs. Summer grasslands are filled with interesting sounds. These include cattle in the fields and chickens in long silver barns. Other sparrow-sized birds like dick sissels are frequent open country singers. So are eastern meadowlarks. In the distance, we even sometimes hear old Bob White himself. No matter how sunny or how hot, a frequent singer in such places is indigo bunting. He's well named because perched just above us, singing on a telephone wire, he is bluer than a summer sky. We hear him best of all in the following recording. These songs of open grasslands celebrate sun and heat and life in the open country.
Joe Neal is the co-author of Arkansas Birds, published by the University of Arkansas Press. His latest book is In the Province of Birds, a Western Arkansas memoir. This is Ozarks at Large. It's the 27th of September, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Bikes and blues and barbecue happening everywhere. Jody Beznoska had to come right through that to get to our studio today.
Well, wasn't too bad. Not yet, anyway.
Well, you came in the morning.
I did, yes. But my office sits just in the perfect place to listen to soundcheck in the big parking lot across from the Art Center every day.
Should mention Jody, of course, is Vice President of Communications at Walton Art Center. And Walton Art Center is kind of taking a breather during BB and BBQ.
Yeah, we're definitely going to, you know, slow down a little bit during this week. We'll have staff in the, you know, in the center, and they'll be helping out. The bikes, blues, and barbecue organizers are going to have vendors and everything on our plaza. So we'll be involved, but we're not, you know, presenting a band or doing any of that this year. So we're a little quiet this week, but next week. Mm-hmm. We got all kinds of stuff kicking off next week, including our new exhibition in the gallery, the Kathy Thompson mm-hmm. piece called 20 Years.
Christina, you talked to Kathy.
I did, yes. Oh, yeah. I went there earlier this week. And,
so you got to look at
it. Have a story
it.
On tomorrow. Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Aren't they fun?
Yes. They are a lot of fun.
Well, and when I say they, I mean Kathy has designed 20 different, she calls them H boxes.
History boxes.
Yeah. And if you've ever been to Bordino's, you've seen them in there. But she's created 20 of those for Walton Arts Center to celebrate our 20-year anniversary. We want to invite everyone to the opening party for that, which is on the 4th of October, which is next week. First Thursday will be going on the square, and then we'll be having our little reception down at Walton Arts Center. We'll have food, we'll have music. Kathy will be there to do gallery talks and answer questions. And we also have another exhibition in the same space by a woman named Letitia Huckabee.
Right.
And she will be here as well. So it'll be a great night for visual arts. And there's going to be some fun little, you know, share your memories of Walton Arts Center and hopefully some music and a big, big open house. And we want as many people to come as we can. So that's Thursday evening. I think it starts at 5:30 or 6 o'clock, something like that. That's the 4th. On the 5th, we will have a concert benefiting the Saving Grace organization. And the band playing there will be Point of Grace.
A contemporary Christian trio that is loved by millions.
Yes, definitely. That's Friday the 5th. That's a 7 p.m. concert. On Monday the 8th, the University of Arkansas Music Department will start their concerts already. My goodness.
You're in the middle of the semester.
I know. They just got here. That is amazing. So that's on Monday the 8th. That's the University of Arkansas Wind Symphony and the Symphonic Band. Mm-hmm. And then on the 9th, Mr. Don Williams, the Gentle Giant.
Cannot wait.
Will be performing. On the 9th, that's a 7 p.m. show. Tickets are going pretty quickly for that one, so get those in advance if you can. On the 11th, another university concert, the Fall Choral Showcase. And on the 12th, we will have Brantley Gilbert out at the Amp. So that will be under the stars. Hopefully it will be not too cold.
Is he a country singer?
He is, yes. Amazing. He is a...
up-and-comer, as they say.
Exactly. A young and up-and-comer. And that's a 7:30 start time for Brantley, although there's always opening acts, so that time is a little flexible. And then, speaking of the Amp, on the 16th, the long-awaited appearance by the Avett Brothers.
Yes.
Which we're all very excited about. That's the 16th. That's a 7:30 show.
So it is at the Amp. I had heard a rumor that it had been moved to the Walton Arts Center. So
I've not heard that rumor.
Okay. I just wanted to clear it up.
Yes. Yeah. At the Amp. Yeah, I don't think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, it is at the Amp. And again, you know, there's no tent, so this will be under the stars, and, you know, we just hope it's not too chilly, but or not raining. No rain. We don't want any of that.
We'll take chilly over rainy.
Yeah.
I can wear my North Face. Yeah. Just don't rain on me.
Yeah, exactly. A little blanket wouldn't be too bad. And then on the 18th of October, there are two concerts going on. There is a performance by a group called Dayglow out at the Amp as well. And then we will have the second show in our 10x10 art series, a performance by a musical group from Morocco. This is part of the Caravanserai project that we're doing with the University of Arkansas. It's meant to increase understanding and engagement with art from Islamic countries. And I don't even think I'm going to try to say the name of the group because I will probably butcher it. But it's going to be a really interesting and colorful and unique musical experience. And that's on the 18th. That is a $10 ticket for the most part. On the 19th, the Tokyo String Quartet will be performing.
Final tour.
This is the last chance we'll get to see them. And both of those 10x10 shows will have a pre-show creative conversation, obviously, prior to the performance. And then lots more 10x10 things going on. Another university concert on the 23rd of October. This is the Symphony Orchestra. And then we will have the LA Theater Works production of Pride and Prejudice on October 26th. And LA Theater Works is a group we've had, I think, maybe 3 times here in Northwest Arkansas.
Year.
Yeah, they're a really interesting and fun company. They're a radio theater company. So they perform, but they also will use live sound effects, and they may be there with a script. It's not necessarily a fully conceived production.
If you had been in a radio studio in the 30s, 40s, or 50s and seen something, this is what you would have seen if you had been a radio engineer or something,
because you
didn't have to memorize your lines because you had the script.
Right. So they create this really, they usually interpret classics and find new ways to do them. But they're really, it's interesting because you will have the sound engineers up there so you can see how they make the sounds, and you'll see how people, you know, change roles, and it's all right there. It's very stripped down. It's great.
If you go to their website, they have many of their events there that you can listen to, and it's fascinating just to listen to. To see them is a whole nother element.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool. They're one of my favorites. I've really enjoyed them. And so this one is Pride and Prejudice, which is a beloved story, so it will be fun to see how that is done.
Which I have to admit, never read.
Well,
I, I, I,
Jane Austen.
Is it a girl thing?
It might be a girl.
I think it might be a girl thing.
Well, I'm not going to say that. I mean, I think Jane Austen is a respected author no matter what. That's one that has...
Little Women?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was that?
Okay.
Wait, that wasn't Jane Austen, though.
No, but that's another girl.
Oh, yeah. I love Little Women. Yeah. I love Little Women.
Yeah. Okay. Pride and Prejudice, you know.
Have you read the sequel? Little Men?
No.
Not as good, but still good.
Well, that sounds like a guy thing.
No, it's about... it's anyway.
Anyhow, speaking of guy things or boy things, yes. I do want to remind everyone that Shrek is coming in the end of October. It starts on the 30th and runs for 8 performances. So there are lots of tickets to Shrek. If anyone tells you it's sold out, they're not right. There are plenty of seats available. And we are running Shrek over the Halloween holiday, which I know is, you know, you may not think about taking your kid to see a show on Halloween, but if you're gonna take them, you should take them to Shrek. And we're gonna have all kinds of activities going on. We're gonna have trick or treating in the lobby. We're gonna have a costume parade. Hopefully, the cast will come out in costume, and there'll be lots of chances to have a good time.
A production directed by Fayetteville native Jason Moore.
That's right.
Talk to him briefly next week on Ozarks at Large. His first feature film comes out nationally a week from tomorrow.
I didn't know that.
Yep. Pitch Perfect.
That's perfect. I love that.
Yeah, Pitch Perfect is the name of it.
About starring a group of singers.
Yeah. Anna Kendrick is the main star. She was in Up. No, not the anime. Up in the Air with George Clooney.
Okay.
She was the female
lead
in that. She's in it. So anyway.
I didn't know that. I didn't know he was working on a film. That's
great.
It's really fun when we have shows that he's involved with because he directed the original Broadway production of
Avenue Q,
and he also did Shrek, and he also worked on the touring production of Les Mis,
right.
All of which will have been through here in the last couple of years. So that's always fun. That takes us through October. I can't believe September's gone almost.
Me either.
3 more days.
Darn near.
Amazing.
Jody Beznoska is
Vice President of Marketing with Walton Arts Center.
Hello, this is Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday night from 10 till midnight. On this week's program, we'll hear music from trumpeter Terrell Stafford, vocalist Alex Cole, saxophonist Lee Konitz, and pianist Ahmad Jamal. That and much, much more Friday night at 10 p.m. That's Shades of Jazz.
Ozarks at Large.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 27th of September, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet Kay Ryan, born San Jose, 1945. Father was restless. He was a truck driver, an oil driller. He dug septic tanks, tried mining for gold. At one point, family never had much money. Ryan said that her mother would have liked to be married to the mailman who was happy in his lot and retired after 30 years with a mailman's pension. Family was constantly uprooted. The girl found it hard to get close to people. She resolved at one point to talk to one person a day who wasn't my mother or my brother. Went to community college and then followed a favorite professor to UCLA, majored in English, got her PhD, and then set off on a 4,000-mile bike trip with a friend along the coast of Oregon and California. She kept a daily journal. She was trying to see if she really wanted to write. She described the feeling as like trying not to fall in love with somebody. You are, but you don't want to. But in the end, she decided that writing gave her pleasure like nothing else. Her first collection came out in 1983, Dragon Acts to Dragon Ends. She settled in Marin County, and she got herself a part-time job so she would have the time she needed to write. She has been teaching remedial English part-time at the College of Marin for more than 40 years now. Her most recent book is The Best of It, New and Selected Poems. It's the birthday of Thomas Nast, the cartoonist, born in Landau, Germany, 1840, came to this country when he was 6 years old, studied art, and got a job as a cartoonist with Harper's Weekly. Thomas Nast was the first cartoonist to have the platform of a weekly national magazine, and it was he who created the modern image of Santa Claus and the donkey and the elephant of the Democratic and Republican parties. And it was he who helped to bring down the corrupt leader of Tammany Hall in New York City, Boss Tweed. Nast published cartoons depicting Tweed as a bloated, thuggish politician. And when Tweed was thrown out in the election of 1871 and escaped from jail and fled to Vigo, Spain, it was the caricature of him by Thomas Nast that led to his discovery and arrest by authorities. Here's a poem for today by Sharon Dunn, entitled Jeans. My 11-year-old son wants to fish. He owns 2 rods, 1 saltwater, 1 freshwater. He loves knives, Bowie knives, Swiss Army knives. Knives like this one, my brother says, opening his desk drawer and taking out a small jackknife with antler handle. My boy camps outdoors, begs to sleep outside, is always shooting arrows, rubber band guns. He is lashing together a fort in the backyard. He sails, swims, kayaks, and wants to know the stars. The outdoor hunting genes are in the dark men in my family, yet I believe he is a son of light. His joy in reading, cooking, and piano are fanned from the tinderbox of his father's heart. He will save rainforest. He will grow vegetables, keep horses, fly his own plane. He will make his own brave life. He will not remake our lives, nor redeem us, nor pity us. A poem by Sharon Dunn, Jeans, from her collection Refugees in the Garden, a memoir and poems, published by the Rose Press and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
KUAF is supported by Archon Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersection in Fayetteville. Archon Printing provides printing, copying, and digital output services. archonprinting.com or 444-7711.
Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring accounting firms and taxes, office equipment dealers, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. The current edition available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com to register for daily business e-news or more information. Giving away some wristbands for the King Biscuit Blues Festival, the one and only in Helena, West Helena. Not this weekend, but the weekend after that, the first weekend in October. Had people enter at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. Several entries. And our winners, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Vicky Sider gets the 2 wristbands.
Okay.
Vicky, thank you very much. Carol Jones gets the 1.
Okay.
So, Carol, if you're taking someone else, you will have to pay. I'll email our winners, tell you how to get the wristbands. We'll figure that out in a moment. Ozarks at Large wasn't around 90 years ago today, but if we were, our top story right now at this very hour would have been the bloody bank robbery in Eureka Springs. This date, 1922, 3 of the robbers were killed by armed citizens in the middle of the street. The getaway car wrecked in front of the Crescent Hotel. They reenacted sometimes
exciting.
During the antique car show. All right. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellen.
I'm Christina Thomas.
This is KUAF, 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers.
L.A. Lowell.
Oh, the whole Arkansas there. Right. Okay. Christina, thank you very much. We'll be back together Sunday morning at 9 on Weekend Ozarks.
Yes.
Antoinette joins me tomorrow for a new show.